Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Just in time for Halloween, this episode features Tara Laskowski reading her story, The Monitor, from her April 2014 issue. For more than 60 years, Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine has published original crime and mystery stories. In our podcast series, we bring you readings of short stories from our back issues so you can get a sense of what the magazine is about. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Tara Laskowski is the author of two short story collections, Bystanders and Modern Manners for Your Inner Demons. Her debut novel, One Night Gone, is just out from Graydon House Books. This spring, she won an Agatha Award for her story, The Case of the Vanishing Professor, which we published in 2018. She is also the editor of the online journal, Smoke Long Quarterly. After she reads The Monitor, Tara will talk about the themes in this story and how they resonate in her new novel, One Night Gone.
Myra and Jack hadn't really expected anyone to shell out all that dough for the video baby monitor, and they only registered for it hoping to be able to scrap together enough gift cards, coupons, and cash to buy it after the shower. But Myra was pleasantly surprised and grateful when her Aunt Verna mailed it to her just a few weeks before the baby was born, with a nice note that mentioned that although she never had the pleasure of becoming a mom herself, Verna thought that a video monitor would come in mightily handy for new parents. And the monitor did come in handy, very handy, in fact, when Eva proved to be a colicky, fussy little thing. Although cute as a button, Eva was a handful, thrusting and screaming and spitting up more than her body weight, it seemed. So wiggly and terrified and just plain unhappy most of the time that Myra had more than once scared herself with thoughts of throwing her baby clear across the room. And when the child did fall asleep, more often out of pure exhaustion from crying than from any of the show and dance rocking and cooing and shushing and swaddling that Myra did, while Jack watched helplessly from the doorway, always a whiskey in hand, his other running through his hair in that nervous way that Myra was sure would make him bald one day. Eva tossed and turned restlessly in her crib, always just one twitch away from waking again and wailing in that way that turned even the sweetest hearts to stone. So they used the monitor often. It came with a small handheld video screen that could be easily lifted from its charging station and carried around the house. Myra propped it up on the washing machine while she did laundry in the basement, or tucked it in her pocket while she vacuumed, careful to check it every few minutes to make sure everything was okay. Some days Myra would just hold the monitor in her hand and collapse on the couch for a restless nap, her head whirling with all the things she should be doing that she couldn't get done. Exhausted. Always. The schedule was relentless, murderous. Myra hated every single one of her friends who had told her how blissful motherhood was. When Jack went back to work, Myra started sleeping in the spare bedroom so that Jack could get his rest. Myra was the first one to get up when the cries came anyway. She was the first to go to the baby, to warm up the bottle, to change her diaper. Myra's body adjusted so that every 2 hours or so she would wake up startled, even if the baby wasn't crying. She would roll over, squint, examine the tiny screen for evidence that the baby was still alive, wait for a twitch or a sigh or some sign of life before she would try herself to go back to bed. Imagine her surprise when one night, half asleep, exhausted, Myra rolled over to check on the baby, and it wasn't hers. The crib was a darker stain, not white. Where Eva's name was spelled in pink woodcuts above the crib, there were instead three pictures of airplanes. Myra jumped up, shook the monitor. In the process, she knocked over her glass of water, spilling it all over the carpet and herself. She cursed loudly, and from the baby's room, a muffled but distinct wail. Eva was awake and unhappy, and yet on the monitor, the baby was sleeping soundly. In Eva's room, Myra bent down over the crib to soothe her sobbing child. And on the handheld monitor, nothing. Not Myra's infrared image, not her nursing nightgown bought when she was still hopeful she could swing the breastfeeding thing. Just a quiet, dark, peaceful room with a perfect sleeping child, hands sprawled above his head. She had heard about these things, about monitor frequencies getting crossed, and it bothered her that the neighbors might be able to see her now, bent down over her fussy, colicky child, judging her and the weight she'd gained, pitying her for her difficult baby. She picked up Eva and moved out of the line of the camera, rocking her in the corner of the room. The next morning, she told Jack about the incident. "It's got to be the people across the street," he said. "Who else do we know around here with an infant Eva's age?" Myra could never remember the names of the couple across the street. They'd introduced themselves several times, but she could still never keep it straight. Ted and Allie, or Ned and Eileen, or something like that. Eileen / Allie was a jogger, jogging right up to the end of her pregnancy, which pissed Myra off for no reason. Every time she and Jack would run into them outside, Jack would point at Eileen / Allie's belly and say, "Must be contagious." It was sort of funny the first time. "Do you think they can see us?" Myra asked, suddenly wanting to close all the curtains in the house, lock the doors. She pulled her sweater tighter around her, rubbed her tired eyes. "I find that really creepy." "Maybe not," Jack said. "I'll read the instruction manual tonight to see how to prevent that." But Jack didn't end up reading the instruction manual. And so when Myra woke up again at 3 a.m. that night, she saw that the frequency was messed up again and that the baby across the street was once again sleeping like an angel. His bedroom was bigger than Eva's, and from the angle of the monitor, she could see past his crib to the door, which was open and led into a hallway and the staircase. The houses across the street were more spacious than Myra and Jack's place, and Myra found herself slightly envious of the larger nursery. She studied the place on that grainy monitor, fascinated despite herself. What were their lives like? Were they both sleeping peacefully with such a good baby? Did they have sex? A lot? When the flash of movement came in the top corner of the monitor, Myra thought she'd just imagined it. But then she saw it again. A face peeking into the room. It was a little boy. Like he was playing peekaboo, his face would appear in the doorway and then duck back fast. The baby continued to sleep. Myra didn't remember the couple across the street having another child. In fact, she distinctly remembered a story that one of the gossipy neighbors had told her one afternoon when she was out on a walk. A horrible anecdote about a late-term miscarriage, Eileen / Allie not only having to deliver the dead baby, but also deal with strangers' well-meaning comments and congratulations when afterwards she still looked pregnant for a while. Myra remembered feeling awkward, knowing something so private about a neighbor she barely knew. It was part of the reason why she almost avoided the woman whenever she saw her on the street. It was also, and Myra felt awful about this, part of the reason why she judged her for jogging so late into the pregnancy. Wasn't she worried about it happening again? Myra watched the monitor closely for another few minutes, but the little boy's face did not appear again, and she convinced herself she'd just imagined it. The monitor screen was so grainy anyway. It was easy to see something that wasn't there. Jack wanted Myra to go back to the doctor and get on meds for postpartum. Myra didn't want to get on meds. She didn't want to walk around like some happy zombie, unable to feel anything. It was normal, after all, to go through some depression after a baby, to feel a little hopeless. She'd read about it, talked to friends who had the same issues. Myra had cried every single day for the first 4 weeks, and it would have been longer than that if she hadn't felt like she needed to hide it from Jack. All the books said this was normal. Babies so young, they don't do anything. They don't smile. They don't play. The first month of Eva's life was crying, pooping, eating, or some version of that cycle. Myra hadn't been ready for this kind of thing. She found herself weirdly creeped out by her child. How wrinkly she was, how delicate, how helpless, rooting around Myra's breasts in the middle of the night like a parasite, staring off into space. Sometimes the child would just suddenly seem to focus intently on a spot just behind Myra's shoulder, and it reminded Myra of the stories her mother used to tell her about feeling like the ghost of her father was in the house with them, watching, guarding. There was only one time when Myra thought Jack might be right about the postpartum. It was one evening after a particularly hard day with Eva. The baby woke up from the morning nap, and she wouldn't stop crying. She cried for nearly 3 hours straight before passing out from exhaustion, then woke up an hour later and started crying again. Jack was late coming home from work, and in the dim light of the early evening, Myra felt like she was going to die. She had the strongest urge to throw her baby across the room, to hit her on the head until there was silence, blissful, peaceful, quiet. It scared her so badly she took Eva upstairs and put her in the crib where she was safe and walked out. Took a long hot shower. When she got out, the baby had cried herself to sleep again, and Myra was so relieved she cried. She never told Jack, but she always remembered it. She was cleaning dishes when she saw the neighbor come out of her house with the baby. Myra wiped her hands, picked up Eva from her swing, and walked outside with the pretense of getting the mail. She waved at the neighbor casually, and when she smiled back, Myra crossed the street to talk. "Hi, I'm Myra." "Right, I'm Ellie," the woman said, stretching out a free hand. "How are things going with the baby?" "Oh, we're doing well. How about you?" "Great. I mean, it's hard, but we're doing pretty well." Myra nodded. "Well, that's good." She felt nervous, like she was on a first date. "I just wanted to tell you that the other night, I think our video monitor signals got crossed. You have one, right? I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw another baby and it scared the hell out of me, as you can imagine." Myra laughed, shifted Eva in her arms. "I wasn't sure if that was happening on your end, but I just wanted to make you aware." "Oh, wow, really?" Ellie looked slightly ill at ease. Oh, that's so weird. Now, I haven't noticed that." She blinked. "How did you know it was us?" Now Myra felt a little odd. "Oh, maybe it wasn't. I just assumed, since he's around the same age. Airplane pictures in his bedroom?" Ellie laughed. "Yeah, wow, that's so weird. I'll have to see if we can change the channel or something." "I mean, I've read about this happening, so I guess it's not that uncommon, but I just wanted to let you know so you don't get freaked out if it happens on your end." They chatted for a few more minutes, and then Ellie said she had a doctor's appointment, and they parted. "Oh," Myra said, turning back, "I just wanted to say I'm home, you know, if you ever need anything or wanted to go for coffee or something." She blushed a little then, hoping she didn't sound too desperate. "I mean, just let me know. I know you have guests visiting now, but if after they leave..." Ellie looked puzzled. "We don't have people visiting." "Oh, I thought you had a little boy there." Myra fumbled with her hair, remembering the little boy on the monitor. The woman shook her head. "Nope, just us. That's about all we can handle right now. My mom was here for a few days and I basically had to kick her out. Drove me nuts." She paused, pulled out her car keys. "But yeah, that would be great. Coffee or something. Just let me know." Myra saw the little boy again that night. He was standing in the doorway this time, watching the sleeping baby. He kept putting his hands together slowly, like he was clapping, but without noise. This time she woke up Jack, shook him until he was conscious, and jabbed at the monitor. "Look at this. Look, that's a little boy, right?" Jack rubbed his eyes and pulled on his glasses with a big sigh. He sat up and took the monitor from her. Then he glared at her. "It's Eva." Myra grabbed the monitor back from him and nearly started to cry. "Maybe the signals only cross in certain parts of the house." Jack sighed, fell back on the bed, and pulled the covers up. "I have a 7 a.m. meeting, Myra," 7 a.m. There's a boy in that room, Jack, I'm telling you. So what? So she told me she didn't have a little boy, that they didn't have anyone staying over. Maybe you heard wrong, he said, his voice muffled under the sheet. I didn't hear wrong, Jack, she said, her voice high and desperate. She was on the verge of tears. It was the same emotional craze she felt in those first few weeks, always on edge, tense, feeling like she was not going to make it through the next hour, the night, the days, and the months ahead. Well, Jesus, Myra, what do you think it is? Do you think they've kidnapped him and are holding him secretly? He doesn't look like he's being abused, does he? You need to go back to sleep. You don't function well without sleep. Well, I would function a lot better if you helped out more, she wanted to say, but she held her tongue, knowing that would get her nowhere. Hands shaking, she went back into the guest room and flung herself on the bed. When she looked at the monitor again, Eva was lying on her side, her arms tugged loose from her swaddle and tucked under her. She Googled monitor signals crossing and came up with nothing much to help. She found an article from a mother praising the new baby monitor technology that prevents that problem and had the urge to email her. She found a lawsuit a man had filed claiming his neighbor was watching his wife breastfeed their baby. She found advertisements, ratings, but nothing that told her how to fix the issue. She just wanted things to be normal. She didn't like to feel out of place, to not be in control, to not understand. She didn't like the clutter that suddenly took over their house. Swings that Eva didn't like to use, toys she didn't play with, burp cloths and bibs and bottles and nipples and blankets. So many blankets. Myra could not walk through a room in their house without tripping on something, stepping over something, bumping into something. That alone was enough to drive someone mad. So the boy was just another unexplainable, irritating, and frightening piece of the puzzle of clutter in Myra's life. What was the issue? Was the monitor not working properly? Who was the boy? Was it another neighbor besides Ellie who also happened to have airplanes in their son's room? Airplanes were a common theme all over Babies R Us. All the rage, really. That was an explanation, maybe. But it didn't make Myra feel much better. She was watching some other family, some unknown family around the corner or down the block, and they were probably watching her. And yet the alternatives were even worse. Ellie was lying, for one, and why would she do that? Or even worse, Myra was hallucinating the whole thing, making it up in her mind, freaking herself out. And if Jack found out, what would he do? Just after Eva turned 3 months, Jack announced he had an out-of-town work conference he had to go to. 2 nights alone with the baby, 2 full nights and days with no help whatsoever. You have to tell them you can't do it, Myra told him. You have to tell them. I'm sure they will understand. I can't, he said, sighing heavily, not meeting her eyes. Myra realized how much she'd grown to hate him these days for doing this to her, to them, for being so damn distant and not even caring about it. You can't? What do you mean you can't? You mean you won't, Myra said. Is Anne-Marie going, too? Just call your mom or someone. I'm sure you can find someone to stay and help out. So she is. Well, that's just great. It's work, Myra. Work. Our living. Remember? He stressed the end of each word sharp, like a knife. Right, she remembered. Back when she'd first found out about the baby, eager, gleeful, really, to give her 2 weeks' notice at the office. And the looks her work friends gave her then. Are you sure you want to stay at home? Words she'd chalked up to jealousy. They were envious of her new life. No longer would she be chained to an 8 to 4:30 work day, a half-hour lunch break, those endless, dreary meetings. She didn't know it would be like this. Jack taking the promotion that would force him to work longer days, to supervise Anne-Marie and her short skirts and chirpy laugh. Myra's days were so long, and no one to talk to but herself. "Call your mom or someone," Jack had said. But she didn't want to call anyone. She didn't want anyone else in the house, taking up her time, seeing how she wandered around the house unsure of what to do, how to be a mom. The first night Jack was gone, Eva sensed something was different and cried for 2 hours before falling off to sleep past 10 o'clock. Myra didn't even bother to put on pajamas. She just tossed herself across the bed and fell asleep on top of the duvet. When she woke up, she was disoriented. It was dark. She heard a humming of some kind coming from the monitor, and when she picked it up, she saw those airplane pictures above the crib. That sleeping, quiet, good kid that wasn't hers. "Oh, for God's sake," she said aloud, her own voice somehow comforting in the dark. "For God's sake, aren't you ever awake? Can't you cry or something? Throw a fit? Something?" The screen went white for a few seconds. Then she heard a noise, like a laugh or a cough. Then the room was there again, and the little boy she'd seen before was standing in the middle of the room, looking at the baby. "He's going to wake him up," she thought. And though that should have made her happy on some level, Myra instead felt this dread, this sense of foreboding, danger, fear. She didn't want that little boy in the room with the baby. She wished she had the neighbor's cell phone numbers. She might have called them then, warned them, no matter how stupid it sounded. "You have a little boy in your baby's room?" But then again, it wasn't the neighbors across the street. It couldn't be. They didn't have another child. And then the boy turned and looked up at the monitor. He smiled, cocked his head in the way that most little kids do to melt your heart. But for Myra, it sent a shiver through her core. She felt hot, scared, that raw terror like the time she left her niece Samantha browsing in a jewelry store in the mall and then couldn't find her. The boy was staring at the camera, staring at Myra, she thought, his eyes glowing green in the infrared. Then he laughed, a high giggle that seemed to echo, come closer, lunging at the camera. Myra screamed. The monitor screen went fuzzy, and then the digital words, "No signal," printed in red. Through the wall, Eva's cries. The baby was fine, just startled from Myra's scream. She held her anyway, rocking her back and forth, trying to calm herself down more than the baby. "They're messing with me," she thought. She peered out the blinds in the baby's room, looking across the street at their house. It was dark, no sign of life. Their garden flag flapped in the wind. Myra poured herself a glass of red wine and sat at the kitchen table in the dark. It was so quiet for once that she could hear the ticking of the wall clock. She drank the wine too fast. It had been so long since she'd had anything to drink. She'd wanted it. Oh, how she'd wanted it. Read many articles online while pregnant about how a glass of wine here and there was no harm. But Jack was very adamant about it. And after the baby came, breastfeeding, Jack still worried about the effects of any alcohol on Eva. Even now he frowned on it, telling her it would just add to her depression. But he was away, so screw him. She poured herself another glass, slightly larger this time, and wandered into the hallway, peering through the front door's glass to the street outside. Ellie's house was dark, and Myra shivered slightly, wondering what would happen if she turned on the baby monitor. The buzz from the wine made her want to do it, even as a feeling of dread swept through her. She wanted to know, and yet didn't. Myra carried a third glass of wine upstairs with her. She read for a while, keeping the bedroom door open so she could hear Eva if she started crying. Around 2 a.m., Eva did wake, and Myra went into the baby's room and swaddled her arms in a blanket so she wouldn't startle herself. While waiting for her to settle, Myra peeked out at the house across the street and was surprised to find it lit up, the lights on downstairs and up. Despite herself, she went and turned on the baby monitor, but for once the thing was working and showed Eva. Myra walked around with it, feeling like some sort of sad spy, hoping for a signal to cross. She found it, of all places, in Eva's room. Myra sat down in the $700 glider they'd purchased at Babies R Us and watched as Ellie, across the street, paced back and forth, trying to soothe an obviously upset son. She turned the volume down so not to wake Eva, but it was clear that the neighbor's baby was wailing, and that Ellie and her husband had no idea how to calm him. "Serves you right," Myra thought, and then grew ashamed of herself. Who was she to be gleeful about someone else's suffering? And yet she couldn't help herself to feel relieved that she wasn't the only one having a tough time, that those perfect people across the street got their share of crap nights. She was beginning to think they had a bionic baby over there. Ellie paced back and forth, her face close to the camera, while she walked back, and Myra could see the dark circles under her eyes in the unflattering lens of the camera. They finally got the son back to sleep, turned off the lights, closed the door. Myra saw out her window as all the lights got turned off one by one. She imagined them settling in, pressing their faces to their pillows, one ear tuned to any noise, any cry, coming from the other room. Eventually they would fall asleep, though. Myra should be sleeping, too. She knew with that same pitted dread in her stomach that Eva would be up in an hour or so, crying that pitiful, lamb-like wail, relentless. Myra got up and started to turn off the monitor when she saw movement in the little boy's room. Something in the corner, behind the bookcase. And then, as if a spider was crawling down her back, she felt shivers. The boy, standing up, stretching like he'd been taking a nap back there, or hiding. She watched with horror. He walked over, peered down at the sleeping baby, then up at Myra, smiling, waving. Then he rocked backwards, holding onto the crib railing for support, and pushed himself up. She saw him sling his body into the crib. There was a loud noise, what Myra felt like was a horrible, scary cackle, and then her monitor went blank, black and white static, like an old television. She gasped, her fingers to her throat, shook the monitor, turned it on and off. Out the window, she could see no lights being turned back on, no sign of life, no sign of anything at all. "Oh God, oh God, oh God," Myra said. Her head felt thick, foggy from the wine, and she suddenly hated herself, hated everything she did, every choice she had ever made. She started crying. Should she go over there, make sure everything is okay? What if that boy? And then the monitor screen came back, and the baby was still in his crib, still sleeping, like he had been when his parents had put him down. And the little airplane model was spinning steadily like it always had, round and round and round. "It's not depression, really," Myra was telling her doctor, fumbling with the white tissue paper she was sitting on in the exam room. "I just need something, I don't know, to calm down a little. I feel so nervous." She was aware she was not making eye contact. She was worried about sounding crazy, about getting sent to see someone to talk to. She didn't want to talk to anyone. It had taken all she had, the call for this appointment, to come in. Just something to take the edge off. She hadn't had more than 2 hours of sleep since the wine night. "Did you try making lists?" the doctor asked when she looked in Myra's ears. She always looked at her ears, and Myra never knew why. "Lists saved me when I first had my son. Made me feel more in control, having right there written down the things I needed to accomplish." "No, I haven't." "Try that, and don't make them too ambitious either," she said, slapping closed her folder and tapping it on the desk. They were done here. "Even if there are only two things on it, just try it." She smiled, pursed her lips. "If not, come back to me and we'll talk about taking something." "Things I can't tell Jack. He works too late. I have dreams that I accidentally break Eva's fingers trying to get her shirt on. Eva has fallen off the bed twice when I wasn't looking. I hate him. I want him to show me his cell phone text messages. The tortellini pasta dish he likes so much is not low fat. The red tie he bought on sale is ugly. The boy is going to kill the neighbor's child, and I don't know what to do about it. Jack was reading the newspaper when Myra came downstairs. He looked up, smiled at her. "Where's the monitor?" "I don't use it anymore," Myra said, sitting in the chair across from him. It had taken her almost an hour to put Eva down, and she was tired. She picked up the section of the paper with the crossword puzzle in it. "Why? How are we going to know if she's awake?" "We'll hear her," Myra said, not looking up at him. He sighed. "What?" she asked, annoyed. "Nothing. It's just, well, you seem very something." "That's articulate of you." "See? Like that. Are you mad about something?" She laughed. "No, I'm super happy. I've started making lists." When Myra was 10 years old, a girl at school told her there were ghosts everywhere. "They watch you when you get dressed and when you pee and stuff," she said on the playground, giggling, running away to snicker with her other friends. Myra still remembered that years later. Sometimes found herself wondering as she pulled on her hosiery or yanked out a tampon, was there a crowd of ghost people laughing behind her? The ghost boy, for that was what he was, that was what he had to be, was not a friendly one. She felt as though she had to warn Ellie, but she wasn't sure how. She had started taking notes of the times she saw him and what he was doing, but it freaked her out so much that she stopped using the monitor altogether. She still felt his presence, though, and it bothered her. Woke her up at night, sweaty and disoriented. He wanted her to turn the monitor back on. On the way back from errands, Myra saw Ellie getting out of her car, and she knew then that it was a sign. She parked next to her and got out with purpose, pulling Eva out of her car seat and holding her tight against her chest. "Well, hello there, neighbor," Ellie said, cheerful, her cheeks red from the cold. "It's a beautiful day, isn't it?" "It is, but I hear it's supposed to get cold soon," Myra said. "Helps you get your thoughts clear, though." "I love this kind of weather. Sunny, cold, crisp, great skiing weather." Myra had never skied in her life, so she just smiled and tugged at her sweater. She was still wearing her maternity jeans, and so she was jealous when Ellie bent over to pull her child out, and Myra could see the clean waistband of Ellie's tight jeans. They had nothing in common. "How's your little one?" Ellie asked. "Oh, she's great. Cranky sometimes, but you know, there's something I wanted..." Ellie slung her purse over her shoulder and locked the car. "Oh my, I know. They are definitely a handful, aren't they? Well, nice seeing you again." She turned to go and then stopped. "Oh, hey, that monitor thing? I noticed it too." Myra found herself flushing. "Oh no." "Yeah, a few times. That's really annoying, isn't it? We think we're probably going to stop using ours anyway, so your problem should go away." "That's what I wanted to tell you. I keep seeing people. Other people. An older boy, really." Ellie frowned. "Oh, so it's not us? That's so weird, because I know for sure it's Eva's room. We can see the name above the crib." Then she stopped, paused. "I'm sorry. I know it's awkward." Myra tried to shrug. Eva was shifting, fussing, hungry again. "It never ends, does it?" Ellie said, smiling. "Always something to do." "True. Too much. Our house is a disaster." "Oh, I know. Especially with people staying over, right? I mean, they try to help, but it just sometimes makes much more work." Ellie paused. "Is she sleeping any better?" "Not really," Myra said. She thought about the doctor then. Wondered if Ellie made lists. Wondered if Ellie had pills. "There's a little boy in your house. A ghost boy." The words sounded ridiculous in her head, and despite herself, Myra let out a little laugh. Ellie paused but didn't acknowledge the laugh. yeah, it's tough, but at least you have help, right? I mean, with Jack working long hours and such, having a nanny must be a huge help. Myra felt herself getting hot. A nanny? But hey, let's try to get that coffee sometime, yeah? Ellie said, moving away. My afternoons are usually easier than mornings. We don't have a nanny. Oh, crap, there I go, sticking my foot in my trap again. Well, I was jealous that you'd found someone to hire to help, especially at night like that. She laughed, then caught herself. I mean, it's not like I was spying on you guys or anything. Geez, just that one night it woke me up. The other night, I guess. Eva was crying and I was confused, you know, because I thought it was Liam, and then I saw her, your sister or your friend or whoever, rocking her. And I was just a little jealous. Well, no, I guess glad for you that you were getting some rest. Rocking her? Myra's heart had started pounding. She felt for a moment like she might faint, but then the world righted itself again. Are you okay? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. We can get another monitor or stop using it or whatever. On her shoulder, Eva started crying then, kicking at her side, trying to get away. The baby was biting her own lip, pushing, looking up across the street at their house, up toward her own bedroom window. Myra wasn't certain, but she thought she saw the baby smile then. Myra, you okay? And Myra could see her then, a silhouette, just a hint of some hair and a hand raised, not in a wave, but just up, pressed against the window, perhaps. Anne Marie, she said quietly, and from a great distance, she heard Ellie say, what? But then no, there was no one, just Jack, crossing the bay windows in the kitchen, pacing back and forth, his shoulders hunched forward, talking into his cell. Myra blinked several times, looked at Ellie again. Your baby, she said, remembering now the neighbor's story about the miscarriage, the little boy that should have been. He's right here, Ellie said, her smile wavering, backing up a little. Maybe you should go inside? Myra shook her head, reaching out her hand. There was something. She was beginning to understand, and yet still none of it made any sense. Your baby, she said again. The one that died. Now Ellie flinched, put a hand instinctively over Liam's head and moved back. What? You... She shook her head. How do you even know? What was it then? Their fears? Their nightmares? Eva's wails grew louder, more insistent, and she pushed herself back, nearly causing Myra to drop her. Myra steadied herself, looked into Ellie's eyes, and smiled. The wind kicked up then, howling as it rushed between the houses. It had a bitterness to it, that first hint of winter. The cold had arrived, and it was settling in. Some of the themes in my story, The Monitor, are about sort of hints at the supernatural and is this happening? Is it not happening? And so for my novel, One Night Gone, which comes out October 1st, 2019, I took some of that same kind of feel. I like thinking about supernatural stuff and never quite defining whether or not it is actually happening or, you know, could be just the character's imaginations. But in One Night Gone, there's a woman, Allison, who was recently divorced and got fired from her job and sort of shamed on social media. And she's trying to recoup her life, get back her life and just get back to sort of whatever normal is, the new normal. And so she takes this job as a house sitter in a wealthy beach town called Opal Beach in New Jersey. She thinks it's going to be a perfect 3 months of calm and quiet and sort of regrouping. And she's there during the off season, so it's quiet and stormy in winter. But she quickly becomes wrapped up in this cold case disappearance of a teenage girl who had vanished from the town 30 years ago. And so she's talking to the locals who've been around forever, and she starts sort of feeling strange things and having strange dreams about this girl and kind of getting wrapped up into the story. And so much of the novel is her trying to figure out what happened to this girl as part of sort of her revisioning of her new life, and she becomes entangled in that. So that's sort of the premise of the story. It's told from Allison's point of view, and it's also told from Maureen's point of view, who's the teenager. So you get a dual timeline of 2015, the present day, and then you also get sort of the sultry 1980s height of summer in New Jersey.
Thank you, Tara Laskowski, for your reading of The Monitor. This story was published in the April 2014 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. If you've enjoyed listening to this story, you'll find many others from the magazine at our website, alfredhitchcockmysterymagazine.com. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published by Dell Magazines and Penny Publications. You can find the magazine at your newsstand. Digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of our managing editor, Jackie Sherbo. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Thanks for listening.